what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you are listening to All Ball, all basketball, all the time. With this pod, it's kind of like you talk about whatever you want, as long as it's basketball or life revolving around basketball. And because we do it once a week, sometimes it is in generality. Sometimes we get to react to one game or one big moment, right? By the way, just kind of side note, you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, every day, or download that podcast, wherever you download podcasts, or listen on the iHeartRadio app, SiriusXM 217 or 203. We talk all sports, and of course, some basketball, a lot of football this time of year. But we get to react on a daily basis to the big stories. This pod, it's just about basketball, but oftentimes we don't get to react to one game. I want to talk about the Lakers and Clippers and the interesting things I saw from the first game of the NBA season. And I want to talk about the Pelicans, etc., and to the Zion Williamson thing. So let's not bury the lead. LeBron James has a new teammate. His name is Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis was terrific, with the exception of the fourth quarter, where he only got two shots, didn't score a point. And some of it is on Anthony Davis. He settled for a pull-up jump shot. He wasn't able to get open. Some of it's on his teammates. LeBron James turned it over two or three times, trying to throw it into him late in the game. And some of it is based upon how they are playing right now, essentially without a point guard. LeBron James started at the point, and the numbers were, eh. I think he got credit for five turnovers, but by my count, there was nine. So friendly, LA, LeBron, scorekeeper, happens. You'll be on the road sometimes and you'll get, you know, a couple of extra. It generally works out over the season. But LeBron was not great. Let me start with LeBron James. He's one of the greatest players to ever play basketball. We can do the debate on a podcast if he's the greatest ever or whatever, but that's not what this is about. And this is a really hard thing for some people to conceptualize. I want to talk about LeBron today, right? I don't care right now about LeBron Cleveland first time when he scored 25 in a row, you know, for against the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't want to talk about LeBron in Miami and the failures early and the success late. I don't want to talk about LeBron. I want to talk about LeBron 2019, late in middle of November after his first game. It is not blasphemy to say LeBron James is not a top five player in the NBA anymore. Just not. Now, does he have a top five mind? Of course. Is he one of the greatest players of all time? Yes. No one's arguing otherwise. Like, he's a great player, and he may go down as the all-time leading scorer. Like, there's records still for him to be set, which are remarkable. And he could win another title with the Lakers. They're not that far off from being a championship team if we would all agree that the Clippers are right there in the discussion, right? Like, that's a lot closer game than the final score may lead you to believe. And I know that the Clippers didn't have Paul George, but the Lakers didn't have Kyle Kuzma. And the disparity between bench and starters was so great, so massive, that when you consider the Kuzma likely to play with the second unit, a guy who averaged 19 a game and has gotten better, not worse, should shoot the three better, not worse, Kuz, you're plugging in 20 points a game. I don't know if you're plugging in 20 points a game for the Clippers, and you're like, wait a second, you just said the same thing about Kuzma. The difference is that Paul George is still going to average over 20, but that's going to be to the detriment of some others, right? To the detriment in terms of the shots of Mo Harkless and to the, you know, I kind of go through the different guys, and he's going to get his, and it's going to cut some of the minutes of some of the other guys, depending on where he plays, how he plays. The same will be said for Kuz, only, like, look, Jared Dudley's not going to be in the rotation. I don't know what they're going to do with the backup point guard situation. I have a suggestion, which is a pretty obvious one. But I think it's a much bigger addition offensively for the Lakers than Paul George is. And that may be hard to conceptualize, but I think if you kind of go through it and go through the lineups, you'll understand. LeBron James in 2019 does look leaner, is moving well. And this is weird. Like, what happens when you say this is people who don't really understand the sport kind of lose their mind. But LeBron James has never been really a guy who's a great perimeter defender. There was the series against the Bulls where he shut down Derrick Rose, but some of that was, a lot of that was the way in which Rose played, right? At the time, Rose was mid-range and driver and get to the bucket guy, and it allowed LeBron to give him space and recover and challenge every shot. You fast forward to now, and LeBron is not only not really a perimeter defender, if you look when Anthony Davis is playing the five, the guy that Kawhi Leonard would prefer to go at, if he had Anthony Davis, he had LeBron James, and he had Danny Green, he wanted to go at LeBron. Right? LeBron is the weakest of those three defenders. It doesn't mean that he doesn't, and people, well, yeah, that chase down block. It doesn't mean that he doesn't play any defense, but his attention to detail is not great. He's never really been a box out guy. There's a really, really big turn late in the fourth quarter where they fouled Montrezl Harrell. He makes the first, misses the second, and LeBron doesn't even offer to try and box out Patrick Beverley. Beverley gets the offensive rebound, passes it to Harrell, who gets an and one, makes the free throw. So it's a 4-point, it becomes a 4-point trip. And the Lakers, it should have been a 1-point trip, and the Lakers would have had the basketball, and I think they'd be down 5. Instead, they were down 8, and that was essentially the game. So when you say these things, you become a LeBron hater to fandom and TV guy who doesn't really, really know ball. But all of you are downloading this podcast because you really know ball, I would hope, or wanted to learn about ball. And LeBron just has things that he's never done. He's never played without the basketball, so he doesn't move without the ball well. He doesn't defend off the ball well in terms of guarding a shooter. It's never been who he's been, right? And he doesn't really box out. He did take a couple of charges last night, which is great, which, I mean, I can't remember the last great player to step in and take two charges. So I'm not saying he's a bad teammate or a bad guy. I'm saying there are things that he's never had to do because he's been able to get away on pure athletic ability for so long. And now as you get a little less athletic and guys are playing harder than you, Pat Beverley steals that ball. That's a big one. But if you watch Kawhi Leonard, who had 30 in, when we're recording this, last night's game, the guy who he most wanted to go at, who struggled to contain him laterally and challenge a shot, was LeBron James. So it's not crazy to say LeBron was the third best player on the floor last night, right? If he's the third best player on the floor and those aren't all the top five guys, here we go. I don't think he's a point guard. Actually, I know he's not a point guard. And what happens is we start to get into this, well, Gottlieb, you're non-shooting, Rondo before Rondo, true point guard. What do you know about this point guard as opposed to the scoring point guard? That's not what I mean. There are little things that point guards do in the NBA that he has never been asked to, nor will he ever do. Like when you're 35 years old, there are just things you're not going to do. He plays too slow. The first thing that happens when you go from college to the pros is you realize the 24-second shot clock changes everything. Now, keep in mind, when I was playing professional basketball, we did play a lot like LeBron likes to play, which is get the ball in the front court, get to one action, maybe a second action or a ball screen or ISO, and play. But that's not how the NBA is more like Europe now, where you advance the ball or advance past the ball, you get into multiple actions, and then maybe at shot clock, after moving the ball side to side, now we have the set, what we want, the third or fourth action, ball screen, lift on the, and everything's kind of moving, and you'll have an open shooter. And it's like poetry. It's very, much more like soccer. Like the NBA has become much more like soccer. And when you don't get the ball, watch LeBron on a made shot or a missed shot. He doesn't get a deep outlet pass. He doesn't play with great pace. A lot of times he crosses the midcourt line with 18 seconds left in the shot clock. By the time he gets in the scoring zone, it's like 16 seconds. Okay, now you set everything up, 14 seconds, and you come off, and now you're into end of shot clock time. It may not seem like a lot to you, but that ball needs to be in the front court, in the scoring zone, with 20 on the clock. In the scoring zone, at latest, 19 on the clock. Those seconds are incredibly valuable. It makes the defense sprint back. It gets everybody in position. It allows multiple actions to occur. And multiple actions mean multiple closeouts. Multiple closeouts give you openings within the defense. And so the way, the pace by which he's playing makes it harder, not easier, to play offense. Secondly, because he always, when he's playing the point, initiates the offense, it's not really where you want LeBron with the ball. Like, the Lakers only really have two players who play going downhill. You want LeBron, after the ball is reversed, get it to him. Now he's attacking going towards the basket. Like, he's a freight train. He may not move crazy well laterally, but for one step, the Euros, using his shoulders, like, he's ridiculous. But because he's coming down and either initiating the offense or starting with the side ball screen or starting with the high ball screen, it doesn't have the same, one, attacking without a pass doesn't do this, doesn't have, you don't have the defense moving and having multiple closeouts. And then two, you're not tired, but it's just a lot of LeBron. And that's not really how basketball is played anymore. Now it's get it up, attack, get it to the other side, attack, get it to a ball handler, play downhill, attack. And that's not how the Lakers are able to play with him at the point. So that leads us to how I think they need to fix it. I could not believe that Alex Caruso didn't take off his sweats. Now, Alex Caruso, to those of you who've been paying attention to Lakers, undrafted, out of Texas A&M. His dad actually is the color voice of Texas A&M. And full disclosure, my dad coached his dad at Crate. Crazy, right? Caruso's a very good athlete. He's big. He's 6'4", so he can switch onto Kawhi, for example. He's an improved. He was not a good shooter early on in his professional career, and that's what kept him in the G League. He's become a guy that can make shots. He's a very, very good athlete. He's a very good defender. And he's a true point guard. And so all of these things are made easier. But instead, you have Vogel playing. I mean, I don't know his, I don't understand the, I'll get to the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, but you're playing Quinn Cook, who, Quinn Cook's a two guard. He's not a point guard. And I pointed this out last year on this and on my radio show that one of the things least discussed with the Warriors, they were like, well, look at the disparity of Warriors when Kevin Durant sits out or when Steph Curry sits out. Well, that was only pointing out how Quinn Cook is kind of a borderline G League player. Like, he's so little, he can't really switch defensively. He's only a shooter. He doesn't create shots for others. And it's hard to be 5'11 and play in the NBA. It's even harder when you're not really a point guard and you're not a dynamic pickup full court defender, right? So he's just out there trying to get buckets, and that's a hard role at that. You don't have to be good. You have to be Isaiah Thomas, when he was with the Celtics, in order to be super effective that way, because you're so ineffective at the defensive end. So the first thing is that LeBron James, he doesn't defend like a point guard picking up full court. He doesn't get back defensively like a point guard. He doesn't push the ball like a point guard. And I think it takes away from many of the things he does like to do offensively. And it's the common misconception that coaches have. A lot of coaches that didn't play have, is they're like, well, we have LeBron James in a high pick and roll. What's the difference if he brings it up or doesn't bring it up? Completely different way of attacking a defense. And the challenges for him without the basketball are completely different. And it's things that Caruso can do. And I don't think the team will live up to their potential if they play as currently designed. And here's the last thing. I know there are people saying, well, what about Rondo? Like, look at advanced stats. Look at traditional stats. Rajon Rondo has been washed up for 5 years. 2009 was a decade ago. It doesn't mean he wasn't a fantastic player in 2009. But he's had an ACL injury. He's had normal wear and tear. He's never been a good shooter. He hasn't been a good defender. He hasn't been a good defender, let alone a great defender, in 5 years. And I think the Lakers are living on the reputation of Rondo, which will only undercut the likelihood they're successful. Like, they're not going to win that way. And then the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope thing is, look, I don't know why they re-signed him, but I do think he has some value if he's at the very end or slightly out of your rotation, right? But here's a great way to look at Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. This is really important. Been in the league, I think, 7 years. And all of the teams he's played on haven't won. Now, it's fair to go like, hey, dude, Anthony Davis was on teams that didn't win. Okay? He was the best player on teams that didn't win. That's fair. They did get to the playoffs a couple of times. He did have some injuries. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope plays like 70-some-odd games a year. He doesn't get hurt. Okay? So he's been a starter on different teams for like 7 years, and none of them have won. What does that tell you? It doesn't mean he stinks. It just means he's not really a starter if you want to win in the NBA. They play Charlotte on Sunday, I'm sure he'll hit four threes. But when they play real teams, he gets exposed. He makes boneheaded plays on inbounds passes like last year against the Bucks or last night. He gets lost defensively, and he doesn't make shots. He's just... Look, there's 450 NBA players. He's absolutely one of them. You know, he's one of the top 300 guys. But the idea that he's a top 50 or 100 guy, I mean, the data doesn't lie. How many years does he have to play a major role on bad teams before you go like, hey, he's part of the problem, not part of the solution? So I think the Lakers, I think Anthony Davis is terrific. They got to find a way to get him the ball. I think that Frank Vogel was a little rusty as a head coach. I think their infatuation with Rondo is going to come back to bite them if they don't go to Caruso, who's younger and can get after it defensively. And look, I think they're a good team. Danny Green played out of his mind last night. They need to play Avery Bradley more. Kyle Kuzma will solidify their bench. They're going to be a really good team. To be a great team, LeBron can't be the full-time point. They got to go with Caruso or go trade for one because Rondo is not the answer. Quinn Cook is not the answer. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is not the answer. And all of those were exposed last night. And LeBron, at 35 years old, doesn't defend the way he used to. I think he's better off the basketball for the most part in possessions than on the basketball end of shot clock. He's got some bad habits that he needs to clean up. He jumped up in the air with nowhere to go and had some turnovers and deflected passes. And they got to figure out a way to get Anthony Davis the ball in important times. Let's welcome in Rick Bucher from Bleacher Report. You also, of course, see him on Fox Sports 1. You can hear his work at radio.com. He was at Staples Center last night. Bucher, that felt like a playoff game, did it not?
It was, yes. It was the energy and the effort. I mean, I got tired watching. I was like, God, these guys are playing so hard and so fast. This is how hard and fast they were playing. Pat Beverly always looks out of place. He did at times, but everybody else kind of was playing with that same kind of frantic energy that he always plays with. And yeah, for, you know, the whole one in, you know, it's one out of 82. That's not the way these guys approach this. And it's going to be a lot of fun watching this back and forth. Even being there in the building, you know, people talking about whether it's, you know, there'll ever be a Clippers town or whatever. A Lakers chant went up and the Clippers crowd was able to drown them out at one point. I don't know that I've ever heard that before. I'm not saying that it's going to become a Clippers town, but there were some gains made by the Clippers in general in Staples Center last night.
All right, so far I've gone through the Lakers and my take on LeBron and the team. Mm. Give me kind of your overview of what you saw from the purple and gold.
Number one, it got me thinking, when was the last time that we saw a LeBron statement game? And I dare say it was Christmas Day last year, and he got hurt. And this was the opportunity to make a statement game. And I've heard all about the rest and the number of days that he's had off. And what I found interesting was he was dominant early on. He was taking it to the Clippers, and successfully. And he couldn't sustain it. He couldn't sustain it at either end of the floor. Now, I don't know, you know, there's times where LeBron will make a business decision and say, this game is not worth my all-out effort. I feel the way this game was in the balance, this wasn't one of those games where he would make that decision. I'm just not sure he's capable in big spots of sustaining it. Now, to your point about, you know, utilizing all the other pieces, yeah, I think, one, you can't anticipate that you're going to get a performance like that from Danny Green every night or on a consistent basis. I think we've seen that. You're going to need to get it from other places. But the other part was that playing through Anthony Davis, and certainly they tried to post him up a lot, he's not a playmaker. I don't know that he gets you great open shots for other guys. And so then it becomes a matter of, you know, this whole idea of LeBron saying we're going to play through him.
Right.
I don't know if he can do that.
He's not. Yeah, he doesn't. First of all, it's not the old days of throw it into Patrick Ewing, double team comes, throw it out.
Right.
Nobody double teams now because you want those, as dominant as he was in the post, analytics tell you, go ahead, take it, and we'll stay home. But that was one of my big things with this team, which is they don't have shot creators. Like, those aren't.
Yep, exactly.
You go through the list, and that's why I cannot believe they didn't give Alex Caruso a look. Like, that's a guy that can play downhill, that can create shots for some people, that can take LeBron off the ball. He's a very good defensive player. Like, I don't understand what Vogel was looking at. I think he got caught up in the Anthony Davis is dominating low post. And by the way, Anthony Davis, only two shots in the fourth quarter, because that gets harder and harder to even get the ball into him.
Well, and this is the beauty of the Clippers. And they, in a way, they've taken a page from the Warriors. They got multiple bodies that they can throw at you, and that's what they did with AD. And he had, you know, he had fresh body. Patrick Patterson, Montrezl Harrell. They would switch, and there was times where Kawhi was comfortable being on him. Michael Green, I think, wound up on him a couple of times. I mean, they had three, four fresh bodies that they could put on him, and I think that's why by the time you got to the fourth quarter, you know, he would back down to a certain point, and he was either taking a fade. Or he was looking to, please double team come, because I don't have the energy to beat this guy one-on-one to get to a spot in the paint. And so there's that. And that to me is the great distinction between these two teams. The Clippers played good defense last night, and at times, and I think they can be much better, and that's without Paul George. I think they can be much, much better. And the Lakers, I don't know. They didn't play good defense. And I don't know with that group how they get better. I look at the Clippers, and I think they're going to beat up. And they're going to wear down a lot of teams this year because they can just put the clamps on you defensively, or at least they're going to be able to. Now, one other side, it was interesting. The modern NBA arena and locker room has all sorts of places for guys to hide and for coaches and players to meet. And I was walking out of the Lakers locker room last night, and the hallway that leads from the outside hallway into the players' actual locker room, Frank Vogel and AD were standing in that hallway having a conversation, like a serious, intimate conversation, and I thought, wow, this is game one, and we're having that kind of conversation in this place in the locker room, and it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. But clearly, I just this is. You know, this is just my speculation. I feel like Frank's going to talk a lot to AD because I don't know that he feels like he can talk to LeBron. There is a feeling around LeBron. You know, when he talk about his nickname, the King, you really get a sense that unless you're a strong personality, he gets treated like a king. People are afraid to approach him and tell him what's what. And for this team to go where it needs to go, as you mentioned, there's some elements. This is the other part when it came to the Kawhi LeBron comparison. Kawhi gets into a rhythm, a very familiar rhythm offensively. He does not rush. He right. surveys. He's going to go right. where he wants to go. LeBron is, it's amazing for all that he's done. He plays really erratic at times. There was times last night where he was playing way too fast, and I'm thinking, if anybody should be composed, like Kawhi, yes, he's got that experience, but LeBron too. And it kind of shocked me.
I thought he played. There was a lot of times in the second half where he played too slow. You know, he's playing the point guard position. Both. You got to get the ball into the front court.
Yes.
You know, in order to get into your multiple actions, and he's like walking it up and trying to, it's like it's yes. a playoff game. Well, like, hey, dude, that ain't how you play now.
Well, Doug, there was a minute left, and they were down by 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And he's pounding the ball at the top of the key. And I was sitting with the scouts, and the scouts and I, we looked at each other. We were like, what's he doing? I don't know. People say he's smarter than everybody else. There are times where clearly he's smarter than me because I had no idea at times what he was doing, and I was surprised by some of the things that he did.
Yeah, he did a big missed box out that Patrick Beverley got an offensive rebound. Was a ended up being, instead of a 1 point trip, a 4 point trip for the Clippers. That was kind of the yep. death knell. All right, so. I guess we haven't seen the rest of the league, but the other point that I was, and I want to get to your thoughts on Zion in a second, but there's two other parts. One, let's get to the Clippers. What do they look like with Paul George? I know more is usually more, yeah. but does Paul George screw him up in any way?
It will be interesting to see just because, for all the platitudes that I gave Kawhi, I think Kawhi can be more efficient. I think there were times where he forced it a little bit, where if you have a Paul George on the floor, if they have somebody else that he, well, hopefully, trusts, that he's going to get to a certain place, he's going to see that it's not there, swing it and allow Paul to go, and even in certain situations, allow Paul to be a playmaker. I feel as if the Clippers can use one more playmaker. And, you know, Doc has the experience. I mean, that's a big distinction between these two teams, is that Doc's dealt with superstars before and multiple superstars, and I think he's going to find a way to give both of those guys the opportunity to shine. And both of these players have had a recent experience where they've had to play with another ball dominant type player and have done so successfully. So I'm expecting that they're going to find a way to make it work. And I'm just laughing because there was at one point, I'm forgetting who had the ball. I think it was Lou Williams had the ball at the top, and Patrick Beverley, I was watching him in warmups, and he could not only could he not miss shooting threes, mm-hmm. but he was wearing all the swag of not missing threes. Like, he would hit one, and he'd do a little backstep shimmy, and then he'd get ready, and he'd take the next one, and he'd hold his form. And it was like, Patrick, I was like, wow, Bev might have a game tonight. And then he could not hit one in the game. And there was at one point where Lou Williams, Pat was wide open on the right wing, and Lou looked right at him and went, no, I'm not doing that. Swing the ball the other way. My point being, I think that Paul's going to add another good setup decision maker on the floor. and it's going to ultimately going to make them better. And defensively, my God, you add Paul George. If you're giving me the Paul George that played healthy in OKC last year and the way he went after it, they are going to be scary. This is going to be Kawhi and Paul George can approach that Jordan Pippen plateau of the Dobermans and being able to really put pressure on you when you try to get into your offense.
Another team that you know a ton about that has been discussed a bunch is the Warriors.
By the way, I have to ask you, Doug, am I being overly exuberant as a result of seeing what I saw last night?
Is there a reason for me to tap the brakes? No. I would say, like, we haven't even mentioned Montrezl Harrell, who, I want to talk about a junkyard dog. Like, he is tireless. He is tough.
Yep.
He is the size of a power forward, but can play the center. Like, he's dynamic. Those guys, you know, the thing about Anthony Davis is you want Anthony Davis to play some five. He wanted no part of Montrezl Harrell on the boards. None.
Nope.
None.
Nope.
He wanted no part of that. That's a man's game. Ball goes up, and he wanted no part of it. And LeBron's not really into that either, right? So I think it's a really, and I love how they, you know, like Landry Shamet as opposed to Quinn Cook or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Landry Shamet's better. He's much younger, but he's experienced in playing the playoffs more than anything. Like, he knows what he is, whereas Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is trying to be a starter when that's what he's been his whole career, but he's not. He should be playing 15 minutes a game. I thought, so I like Landry Shamet better than what they have. Obviously, Lou Williams never seems to age. He's kind of a walking bucket. There are going to be some nights when he takes some bad shots and he shoots you out of a game. But I like a lot of the things. I like a lot of the things that you like, and I was interested because I talked to some of the Clippers guys and like, well, we might not be that good early because, you know, we're adding Kawhi. It's so different. And we might not be that good in the middle because we're going to add Paul George. And it's so different. You're like, but by the end of the year, we should be really good. Like, damn, by the end of the year, you look pretty good night one. I would have thought the Lakers were further ahead, even though they didn't have Kuzma. And I was a little disappointed. I don't think that, and I'll give Frank a little bit of a pass because he hasn't coached this team before in a real game. And he hasn't coached in a year and a half and hasn't coached at a high level in the NBA in 5 years or so. And so maybe he's trying to figure it out. But if he hadn't figured out that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is not the guy late in the big game, then I can't really help.
Well, and injury-wise, preseason, I mean, they didn't play those guys long stretches.
But you got to know what you're looking at.
With AD and LeBron in particular, I mean, playing against the Warriors, I don't know that that's really much preparation because they could do.
Well, I
want to
ask you about
against the Warriors.
I want to ask you about the Warriors. I feel like even more strongly that this is a gap year when Steve Kerr kind of lowered expectations. Hey, we don't expect Klay to play this year. I don't know if people understand how much turnover that roster has had. I think what happens is you see Steph and you're like, well, Steph's going to give you 35 maybe.
Right.
Like, we got Draymond, so you can still play small. Right. D'Angelo, who's going to average 25. Right. And they do the box score thing. And then you get Klay back and that's another 25. You're like, you're fine. Like, I don't know if people understand that. And I know that Andre Iguodala was not a regular season player, but you lose Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, Kevin Durant, like the team was built on versatility and on defense as much as it was the shooting and the shot making. And oh yeah, by the way, like one of the great things about KD and about more importantly about Klay is what they do at the defensive end. With no Klay, you not only lose the absolute lights out shooting, Klay takes a man and maybe a man and a half away from the defensive end, but he's also a great defensive player. You lose all of that for at least half to three quarters of the season. Like, I think they'd be very fortunate to be a playoff team.
I think you're right. As of right now, there was a lot of talk again at the game last night with people with personnel from other teams about, you know, OKC is going to be better than you think. A big question is whether CP3 buys in. But if Oklahoma City is in the playoff picture, I can name eight teams right now that are definitively better than the Warriors. And you're absolutely right. I think people just look at the names, or they look at the. It's so hard to imagine that the Warriors go from a perennial champion or NBA finalist to not being in the playoffs. But it is. Look, they. You said that they were built on versatility and depth, and that's what they originally were built on. But the reason that Kevin Durant was such a saving grace is that they went from that depth
right.
to that absolute, you know, top heavy
yeah.
powerhouse. And you had four great players in Steph, KD, Clay, and Draymond. Well,
and now you're trying to go back to the versatility, but
yes, but these guys
have all not been proven, haven't played an NBA game together. And when you had that versatility, you had, you know, veterans like a Maurice Spates. You had veterans like an Andre Iguodala. You had veterans like a Sean Livingston, like a Leandro Barbosa. Like, we've completely forgotten what made the Warriors special before they added KD. And we assume, hey, let's just go back to the versatility, strength, and numbers thing. Like, yeah, but Steph's the oldest guy on the team. They've gone with super young guys. They're going to figure out who they like out of this group. But I even think the Warriors' own expectations are this is a gap year.
Yeah, well, and that's going to be the real battle. Is they're in a brand new arena, which is gorgeous and inexpensive. And I think if you got Bob Myers and Steve Kerr alone, and they would tell you, look, there's no reason for us to, you know, beat our heads against the wall to make the playoffs this year. Like, we shouldn't, let's not run Steph and Draymond ragged trying to get this done, or, you know, trying to prop up D'Angelo Russell and make him look either like he belongs as part of the nucleus here, or that, you know, to bump up his trade value. Let's approach it the way we always have and see where it goes. And if this season goes sideways, then so be it, and we get a lottery pick, and now we add a legitimate quality player, and we bring Clay back next year, and now we got something to build off of because they're capped out. So you're not, you know, the whole free agency thing is not going to work for you. But try telling that to Joe Lacob, because Joe Lacob has this, you know, he's still determined to live up to the light years comment, and that's why they, you know, signed a Willie Cauley-Stein and a D'Angelo Russell. It's like, we're smarter than everybody else. And they've added so many guys, even from what I've heard about, like, Jordan Poole. And I don't know him. It was kind of a passing remark. Like, they've lost, they built such a great culture, such a unique, dynamic culture. In terms of the not just the talent, but the kind of guys that they had. And Steph and Draymond are of the mind, we can infuse this in, you know, we know what it's like, we know what it feels like. You bring us guys, and we can draw them into the culture. Well, I'm not going to say that they can't, but I think that that's a very tall order for the guys that they added. And so there's going to the real battle here is not going to be the Warriors with the rest of the Western Conference. It's going to be between the coaching staff and the front office and ownership in terms of what direction they should go and really how hard they should be pushing to make the playoffs and try to be a force in the postseason. Because I just don't think they have it. If they make the playoffs, I don't think they're a threat. And I think that's what was behind Steve. Like, Steve talking about Clay, you know, probably not going to play this year. And then having to walk it back, I can't help but think that was, you know, somebody in ownership going, hey, we don't want to talk that way. Like, we don't want to put out the possibility that Clay comes back and we make a run. We want to approach things different. And I think Steve's on. You bought the goodwill of the Bay Area. You have this great arena, which, by the way, I went to, and like, it's an attraction in and of itself. Killing yourself to make the playoffs this year just doesn't seem light years ahead. It seems imprudent because you're going to wear Steph out, you're going to wear Draymond out, and then when you do have and lose out the opportunity to add a legitimate young talent, and for what? So you get Clay back and what? Like, even with Clay and D'Angelo Russell, that's duplicative. I don't see any reason. I think the smart play for them really is to not make the playoffs this year, as you call it, a gap year. I think that would be the light years ahead.
Yes, and you get the longer off season. You know Steph's going to play in the Olympics, right? So you don't want him to play in the, I don't even know if it's intentional. Like, we can do this thing where it's intentional. I don't think they had to be intentional. I just don't think, like, there's a bunch of teams we don't even discuss. I mean, obviously Portland, Utah, Denver at the top, but then in the middle, you mentioned Oklahoma City. We'll see what they look like. The Pelicans, we'll see what they look like. We'll see what the Timberwolves, what they look like. You know, the Mavericks, I'm excited to see what they look like. You know, like, we're going deep here in this side. Okay, let me get to the other topic is Zion. And you and I have discussed him, and I've tried to paint him, tried to lower some expectations there. But David Griffin comes out, and now what he said was, you know, anybody says he's not in shape, you know, but he didn't say what I've been saying, which is like, hey, he's got to lose some weight. Now, I've seen guys on TV say he's not going to lose weight. He's got to change his body type, you know, which, again, like, we're all coding things up. But when you hurt your knee in college, no matter how freak it was, he did not look. And when you see him in person, you're like, that dude looks like a football player, right? He just has a different build, which is what they're saying, and I agree with. But when you saw him get hurt in summer league, he didn't look nearly as fit as he had previously. And though he's looked fit now, he's just, you know, to jump like that, it's the landing and the torque put on those knees. You know, we had a guy at Oklahoma State named Roy Canley. Okay, Roy Canley has since passed away. Big Roy. Mm. He grew up in Louisiana, and his he was so big
well
and so poor
you,
when he was
way.
A kid.
Louisiana, that was very well done.
Yeah. So Shaq sent him shoes because he wore like a size 21, 22 shoe or whatever. And so Roy showed up on our campus at a junior college, and he was 7'1", 7'2", gigantic hands. And he was like four bills. And coach was like, look, you're not getting onto a basketball floor until you're, I don't know, under 380 or 360 or something like that. I mean, he was just massive. And it was always a fight, and I don't think he ever played a game when I was there. And then the next year at some point, that year they found him, like, he was like sneaking Twinkies and stuff like that. It was funny, but he's passed away, and so I don't want to get into it, Roy. But the point is that I almost feel like that's what the Pels should do. It's just draw a line in the sand and go like, hey, man, look, Blake didn't play his first year. Ben Simmons didn't play his first year. We want you to play, but let's figure out a way in which you can get under, I mean, 260? I don't know. He's 6'5". He's 6'5", right? 6'6", with shoes on. He's 6'5". So you got to get him under, no matter how thick he is, you got to completely change his diet and change some of his body and lighten him up. Otherwise, it's just too much weight with how he jumps and plays.
I get that, and I think that could alleviate some of the problems. But the greater issue to me is something that you cannot change, and that's the foundation of his game, which is all explosive movement, lateral spinning, twisting. Like, it's dynamic and it's amazing and it's breathtaking. But I think about, like, he's built basically the way Charles Barkley was built. And Charles played with a lot of weight, but Charles had a completely different game. His explosion was straightforward. He had the ability to get himself in places on the floor and then explode over you or pass you with a step. With Zion, his game isn't as nuanced. Chuck, just because he could shoot from range and he had a mid-range step back, like, he could make you come up on you and then he could just kind of blow by you almost on a straight line. Like, Zion doesn't have that. Everything that he has is, I'm spinning laterally and I'm going in different directions. And to me, that's where the torque comes in. And, you know, short of saying, we're going to up your skill and we're going to, like, fundamentally change the way you attack the game, I think you're going to run into the same issues. It's a lot, I think I mentioned it when we talked about it, like Derrick Rose, because when he came in, like the straight up pull up jump shooting wasn't quite there. Like, he needed all that dynamic spinning torque to do what he did. I see Zion as just a bigger version than that. And, you know, I would dare say that one of the reasons that Derrick has, like, been able to kind of find his way the last couple of years and stay healthy is because he has changed the way he attacks. He's become a little more methodical and straight line. And that's where, you know, everybody's kind of caught up in the weight and what kind of weight, the condition. And I look at the fundamental way he plays and the body that he has, and I'm thinking, man, that's like a vault on casters. Like, it moves really fast, moves in ways you would never expect something like that to move, and yet it's going to tip over at some point because it just physics. It doesn't allow you to torque that way on ligaments. You can strengthen everything as much as you want. Your joints can only take so much.
So, Buick, I guess the question becomes, if you're pointing out that this is the way he plays, regardless of the weight, yeah. I mean, at what point do you go, man, might have a lemon, right? Like, everyone's had that car that no matter how, even Lexus, even Infiniti, even, you know, you pick your supposedly best made cars, there is one that somebody drives off the lot and like, you know, I don't know if the brakes work here. I don't know if the transition. Yeah. Like, there has to be a legit fear that they have a lemon.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there should be great concern. And I understand why David Griffin would tamp down any of that or any talk of that because the number one pick, I mean, not just the number one pick, the only reason the Pelicans were on opening night against the defending champions was because of Zion Williamson. Let's be honest. And he wasn't there. That's why they were there. Now, the one plus that they have is I think they have a lot of depth, and I think they have a lot of versatility. And there's plenty of reason why you wouldn't have to play Zion heavy minutes or a heavy role. You can find a way to incorporate him without having to overuse him. And that's the way I would approach this season. I would be looking at, you know, and again, now you got the negotiation with him and his people, like, don't worry about rookie of the year. You know, we're going to play you 25 minutes a night, and we're going to put you in action that allows you to go to the rim but doesn't ask you to do, you know, too much. And see if that, and meanwhile, try to develop the rest of his game. But I do think, like, with a car that you drive off the lot and it has issues, like, you need to immediately begin. It'll work itself out. We need to get the oil hot and let it run through the system and it'll be okay. It's like, no, you know what? We need to take a fundamental approach. We're just driving this car in town. We're not taking any long trips. We're not taking any windy roads. We're gonna, you know, we're gonna keep it under 45 speed limit as much as we can, and kind of coax this thing through the season. I think that's the approach you have to take until Zion gets to a point where his game becomes less physically dynamic, and he begins to be able to use the mental skills that he has, because I do think that he sees the floor well. I do think that he's for all the hoopla, he seems like a good kid who wants to play, you know, within the team confine. And so I think there's a way to get there, but they need to approach it with the idea that we're trying to extend the shelf life of this guy right from the start, which seems kind of crazy being a rookie and all that, but I think that's the way they have to approach it.
Last thing, is this the year the Sixers finally figure it out?
I'm still, I have my reservations. I just, if it's not this year, then they're in trouble because of, like, the Al Horford signing to me is a lot of money for a guy who doesn't really solve your problem. And to me, it all comes down to Ben Simmons and what he is. And it's a little bit, I see a little too much of AD in him in terms of, is he that guy who's going to impose his will? And is he a guy who's going to take on the challenge every night? Ben Simmons has to be that. It can't be the nights where he defers or he decides my scoring's not there, whatever. And I believe Embiid is the best player on that team, but Ben Simmons is the guy who's going to have the ball in his hands. And I just don't see a way in which you win a championship when your point guard can't shoot. It sounds like an oversimplification, and Ben has a lot of other things that are plus, but that is such a minus in today's game, right, that all those other pluses, I don't see them overcoming it.
We still have plenty of time to check out Houston. We haven't discussed Portland.
Yeah.
You know, Denver is trying to do it in numbers and through Jokic. Of course, you
want
to see the Milwaukee Bucks.
I'm not buying that. Toronto showed why I believe that people have undervalued who they are, because they learned so much last year. They're going to win. I don't know what they're going to be in the postseason. That's where they're really going to miss Kawhi. But there's going to be no situation that is uncomfortable for them. They know how to execute under pressure. That's going to win them a lot of games this year. They just have an institutional knowledge of how to play. Yeah. There's not going to be a situation that phases them. And meanwhile, you got a lot of teams around the league that are going to be trying to figure it out and figure out how they want to play with the game on the line. And I think that's going to end up giving the Raptors a lot of wins against teams that we might look at and say on paper are actually better.
The most fascinating, it's going to happen in two places, right? It's D'Angelo going to the Warriors a little bit, but to me, Kyrie playing for the Nets, considering how the Nets have played. I don't know if this hasn't been discussed enough. And you and I have both worked at these places talking about and covering the NBA games. But I haven't heard anybody on TV say, like, do we not realize that here's a team that was a pick and roll, total analytics, great culture team, and you bring in a guy who, he can play pick and roll, but like Kyrie's an ISO guy. And he is not an analytics guy. He is not an at the rim. He's an unbelievable finisher, and he can make threes, but he's not like a pure analytics player. Like meshing those two styles and his personality with the great feelings they had last year, I think that's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. Well, and I was looking at the Las Vegas and first coach to be fired list, and I think Kenny Atkinson did a great job last year, but he's got something that he has to figure out this year, and he wasn't on that list. I was really interested. And if you got to, like, Terry Stotts is on the list, Quinn Snyder is on the list. I'm thinking, those guys don't have the same issues. They don't face the same issues, and they've had actually more success and have a better relationship with their star players. And I'm not wishing anything on Atkinson. I don't think he's going to get fired. I think Brooklyn is smarter. I'm just saying, if you're looking at coaches who are in difficult situations, Kenny Atkinson is certainly on that list.
No question. And it's one of those that I don't know if people understand what they're walking into. Maybe the talent is so, but they didn't win on talent last year, right? They won on culture and on analytics. And they beat up on the teams that had decided to lose.
And catching people by surprise.
Yep.
Nobody was talking about Brooklyn at the beginning of last year.
Because you'd go out the night before you're going to play the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah. I mean, and for all that, they were 42-40. they were a little bit like that Orlando Magic team that Doc, you know, went 41-41, didn't make the playoffs on the last day of the season, and got a Coach of the Year award for it. It's like they were a nice team. They were greater than the sum of their parts because they didn't, you know, they didn't have any stars. D'Angelo Russell ended up being the All-Star. Caris LeVert doesn't get hurt. He's probably the All-Star. I mean, they got it from a multitude of places, and that's what Boston thought they were going to have last year. And then Kyrie upset that. So that dynamic is going to have to change this year, and I just think everything that made them what they were last year, you and I agree on this. Everything that made them what they were last year goes out the window the second that you sign Kyrie Irving, just by not intentionally, just by virtue of how he plays and the kind of player that he is.
And the kind of person that he is. He wants to be he so wants to be somebody who everybody likes and everybody respects and leads, and he just hasn't shown himself to be that guy. And no matter how interesting his logic is as to why he wasn't, how he, like his grandpa dying, whatever, like,
right?
Yeah, but before your grandpa died, people didn't dig you in Cleveland, right? Like, it's kind of who you are. But maybe you know, like all of us have hit situations that we learn from in our life, and you know, allow a guy who's not old to evolve.
If his grandfather, if that whole personal connection to Brooklyn makes him come to the team and say, you know what, I just want to be a worker among workers. I want to make the Nets great in honor of my grandfather. Then I would say, okay, now you got something. But I haven't heard that. I it's one thing to have the emotional personal story that sounds really good, and then there's one that turns it into something that is definitive and operative and affects how you approach your job. I haven't seen that, those dots connected. It's why he's in Brooklyn. It doesn't tell me he's going to play a certain way in Brooklyn, and that is going to be the determining factor.
Awesome. Appreciate you popping on the pod. Radio.com. You can get all of his audio stuff at radio.com. Read his work at Bleacher Report. And, of course, see him on Fox Sports 1 on Speak for Yourself. And all Undisputed, Colin Cowherd, all the different TV shows. He's the one and only basketball sage, Rick Bucher. Buke, great stuff.
Great being with you, Doug.
So, look, that's kind of an early take. What we're going to do next week, okay, this is kind of, a lot of people do your basketball preview. I want to have everybody see, well, I want to see all these teams play. And then we'll have some guests on from who covered these teams and what they take. Now, it's so different when you see a team actually play. In the meantime, you can always comment on the pod at Gottlieb Show is the Twitter handle. We have the Facebook page for the Doug Gottlieb Show. You can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show 12 to 3 Pacific Coast time, 3 to 6 Eastern. Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com, the iHeartRadio app, SiriusXM 217 or 203. In the meantime, enjoy the hoops. I know there's baseball, I know there's football, but this is a great place to just download, listen, don't subscribe, don't be afraid to rate us, review it. It does actually help the podcast. In the meantime, hope you enjoyed the complete recap of the first night in NBA hoops and get you ready for the NBA season. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.